Okay, this is an interview between Anna Cox and Susan Mann as the interviewer. Meg Butler is being the technician with all of the equipment, and we are doing an oral history recording for the Friends of the Botanic Gardens, and it's the 28th of January 2009, and we're recording this in the Biodiversity Centre at the Adelaide Botanic Garden. Okay, thank you, Anna.
Pleasure.
So just to start, could you just give me your full name, please?
Anna Sterling Cox.
And when were you born?
1941.
Okay, and what, you know, whereabouts?
Here in Adelaide. My parents, my mother was born in Adelaide. My father came from interstate.
And what were their names, Anna?
Anna Dorothea Morrison and Robert Hay Morrison.
Okay, and can you remember the years they were born?
My mother would have been born in 19... Well, she's going to be 92 at the end of this week, so I should be able to work that out. And my father was a couple of years older. He's okay. Dead, my mother's still alive.
All right, thank you. And what did they do? What did...
My mother was a physio, my father was a journalist with the ABC.
So, and where did you live growing up?
We grew up in Glenunga on a double block with magnificent trees, and that was the start of my great love of gardens, is particularly that... trees. Very formative place. And in those days, Glenunga was semi-rural. When walking to kindergarten, we had to wait for a flock of sheep to be driven down to Glenunga Avenue. You wouldn't believe it now, but that's how it was then.
My goodness. Yes. And did you have siblings?
I have a brother who's very keen on science communication.
Okay.
Rob Morrison.
Okay. Thank you. And what about your grandparents? Do you remember them at all? Were they also Adelaideans?
One was. My grandmother had been, but she died before I was born. My grandfather lived in the hills here. That's my mother's father. My father's parents were separated. One was a dentist in Melbourne, and the other one was a very fascinating woman who lived in Sydney.
Okay. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Well, that sort of finishes those demographic-style questions, so many thanks. So I'd like to really think about, put our focus now onto sort of your experience with the gardens. And as I was talking with you earlier, I'd love to focus on some of those early experiences because, you know, you have a great history with the Friends, which would be wonderful to get down. But at the time of the establishment of the Friends, do you recall what the Adelaide Botanic Garden actually looked like at that time?
Yes, I do. And it was very different, actually. There were more staff, many more outdoor staff, and they were horticulturally, because Noel Lothian was the director at the time, extremely interesting. And you would see, as you walk around the garden, you would see people with notebooks writing down the names of plants. Now, I don't think I've seen that for many years, but there was much greater diversity of planting, much less use of wood chips, and, you know, generally for a home gardener, it was a more interesting place.
Right. So the people that I'm interested when you sort of said, you know, the gardeners were writing notes, was this...
No, not the gardeners, sorry, visitors to the garden.
Oh, really?
Would be writing down, I mean, for example, the rose garden, Brian Morley changed it so that there was only one variety per bed, but Noel Lothian had it so that there were rows and rows of three of each kind.
Okay.
So the number of varieties of rose are absolutely huge. And I could see what Brian Morley was hoping to achieve. And he did it with a sort of bolder look. But for the home gardener who wanted to write down varieties of roses, it wasn't quite so attractive to them.
Okay, oh, that's very interesting. Mm. So what did they use for mulch back then? You know, as you say, they didn't use wood chips.
Well, they had a wonderful compost heap in that corner near the 100-foot shed. Very spectacular in winter when it steamed. And I know a fellow who had been, not an apprentice, but I've forgotten what they call them, a trainee, I think. And he said they used to boil the billy there in the morning tea time, which occupational health and safety wouldn't have you doing now. But you could see the steam coming off it. It was quite dramatic. Yes. So I would say mulch. And they also used to get the zoo sweepings.
Okay.
And I can remember a gardener once finding a shed snake skin in the mulch that was being spread, which was interesting.
Yes, my word. Mm. Yes. Okay, thank you. So what place did you think that the garden, the Adelaide garden, play in the Adelaide community?
Oh, I think it's people have a deep emotional attachment to it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the place they come when they're in love, when they have little children, all this sort of thing. It's I think people are deeply attached to it. Mm-hmm. And now, of course, they can get married there. Yeah. So that's a whole new collection.
Yes, yes. And the fact that there is no cost to come into the garden, would you see that as an important part for the community?
I would indeed. Mm-hmm. And I think it's also, you can see the place in hot weather is used as a refuge by people who can't afford air conditioning. Mm. And I used to notice that very markedly, that especially at weekends, you'd see people who obviously didn't have much. And now I'm pleased to see you're more likely to see people from other ethnic backgrounds, which used not to be so obvious, but it is much more now.
Yes, yes, it's excellent, yeah. Mm. So when did you join the Friends?
I was at the first meeting. I was actually asked to go on the steering committee because I'd written a letter to the gardens objecting to some of their developments. And especially, I really disliked what was then or became the Italianate garden, but it was created with red scheme money that flowed very freely under Mr. Whitlam. It's now the Mediterranean Waterwise garden. But Noel Othian got carried away with the free labour and the, you know, lots of money and put in all those bricks that it used to have. And it was an annual display garden. And, of course, that fell out of fashion when money got a bit tighter. But I wrote a letter complaining about that in particular. And Enid Robertson, I think, had remembered. And so when Colin Rob Jones really talked seriously about setting up the Friends, Enid suggested me. And I can still remember what I said when Colin rang up to ask if I'd go on the steering committee. I said, me? I'm just an ordinary housewife. So times have changed. Women wouldn't say that now, I don't think. But then we had this wonderful inaugural meeting to form a steering committee where there were more people than chairs. It was a very exciting night. And I was at that. So I was on the steering committee.
Okay, oh, that's excellent. And did you have a particular, did you hold one of the offices or were you a general committee member?
There were only five of us, I think. President, which was Colin, secretary, which he had a cousin, a rather difficult woman, I can't remember her name now, and I think he got her as the original secretary. And then Shirley Simpson, he got the descendants of Schomburg and, A. Simpson to move the original motion that the steering committee should be formed. Shirley Simpson was one of them, somebody else. And then we had the assistant director at the meetings because they were held in daytime. Mm-hmm. And that was Brian Morley in the days when he was an assistant director, mm-hmm. and great fun, actually. Mm-hmm. So they were interesting times.
Absolutely. So your main motivation for joining the Friends was because you had an innate love of this garden?
Yes. When we were first married, we lived in North Adelaide. And so that the Adelaide Botanic Garden was our garden. Mm. We came here often.
Yes. Wonderful. So can you tell me, or can you just paint me a picture of what was involved in being a friend in that very initial stage?
Oh, I think obedience to Colin's wishes. He was a tremendous dictator. Okay. And he had such excellent judgment. I mean, the way he set up the Friends so that all the volunteers had to be friends, apart from the volunteers in the herbarium. Mm-hmm. But, for example, in Melbourne, the guides, as you doubtless know, are not friends, separate. But Colin believed that everybody should be friends, mm-hmm. that it should all come under the one umbrella, and communication was made easier. So. Mm-hmm. But he set up all kinds of very good things, like, the guides didn't come for quite a while. But, for example, sending out the Gazette, mm-hmm. You got it exactly a fortnight before each meeting. Now, that really promoted attendance at meetings. It was all quite straightforward. Mm. And we used to get huge numbers at the first meeting when people would come and pay their subscriptions. And that was excellent. Mm. He had a finger on a lot of pulses and mm-hmm. got excellent speakers, mm-hmm. Exciting speakers. Mm-hmm. And he would find out when someone interesting was coming through Adelaide. He kept in touch with the staff enough so that mm-hmm. they would be asked to speak to the Friends. Mm-hmm. I always thought the timing of the Gazette was excellent.
Mm. So it always came out monthly.
No. There were only there's six meetings a year.
Okay, so bi-monthly.
Except for the AGM, mm-hmm. it came out, you got it in your hand a fortnight before each meeting.
Yeah, it's excellent.
And then we realised that attendance at the AGM wasn't too good because there wasn't a Gazette immediately before it. So we then started sending out an extra notice mm-hmm. to ginger people up a bit.
Yeah.
And his idea was that the AGM should be an enjoyable meeting. That was the relaxing meeting, but mm-hmm. the other meetings would be more informative. And he was very keen on keeping the aims of the Friends in mind. It wasn't a horticultural society. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that it is now. Mm-hmm. But we didn't very often have a speaker on how to grow mm-hmm. X, Y, or Z. Mm-hmm. You know, it was broader than that.
It was broader than that. So can you give me a bit of an example of who those speakers were?
No, I'd have to look at the Gazette
That's
for that.
Okay. That's
yes.
okay.
Yes. I do remember, the fellow who was director of Wakehurst Place, Tony Schilling he was. He'd been a plant explorer in Bhutan and he introduced quite a few things to mm-hmm. horticulture.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that was absolutely fascinating lecture, first rate.
Mm. Yeah, it sounds wonderful. So the greatest influences on the development of the Friends then would obviously be Colin.
Oh, absolutely. Mm. When we started running the shop, and it started in the Museum of Economic Botany, mm-hmm. Colin did the buying, and he would sometimes take some of us with him, mm-hmm. and he did take a little group of us once. But anything you suggested, we went to this wholesaler. Anything you suggested, he would simply veto. And he would choose what was going to be sold. Oh, it was just, you just had to do what Colin said.
Mm-hmm.
But he was such an intelligent man and mm-hmm. so experienced that I didn't find it a hardship.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that it's interesting. So what did you most enjoy about being a friend?
Well, I think the stimulation and the wonderful treatment by the staff. So we learnt an enormous amount. I met a lot of terrific people, some of whom are still my friends, mm-hmm. which has been lovely. Mm-hmm. Getting to know what went on behind the scenes, that was very fascinating. Mm. I think those were the things, really. Mm. Mm. And then being a guide, that was the best thing of all. Because I suppose it had all of that plus the sort of adult education kind of angle.
Mm.
When people said, oh, but, you know, guides aren't teachers, that's not a view I take.
Mm-hmm.
I think we were there to inform people, mm-hmm. pass on a lot of information. But you didn't do it if they were a social club which was only going to the gardens because the secretary said they had to do something,
yeah.
You know. But you often got people who really wanted to know mm. things. So that was a very nice position to be in.
Yes, I'm sure. So you were the first guide leader, is that correct?
Yes, yep. Yes. It was Colin really who set the guides up.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever anyone tells you, it wasn't me, it was okay. Colin.
Mm-hmm.
And he asked me if I'd be the first guide leader. Mm-hmm. So it was a very, very exciting thing to do.
Yes, I'm sure. Mm. So how did he set it up?
Oh, he organised the first series of lectures from the staff.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had to practice. And we were thrown in at the deep end because Brian Morley refused to examine volunteers. He said there was no way that he could throw anybody out.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt that had us at a disadvantage
mm-hmm.
later because we were the only lot that had never been assessed. So I started this practice that after so many years you had to give a trial walk with some other guides
mm-hmm.
coming and hearing what you were saying.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that filled in that slight uncomfortable feeling that
mm-hmm.
you know you were a guide but you'd never been assessed. Why were you swanning around mm-hmm. over, you know, imposing conditions on other people?
Mm.
So yes, Brian was quite soft-hearted about the friends, but he used to come to friends committee meetings. His attitude was excellent.
Mm-hmm.
He was always very welcoming. He was most appreciative of what the friends did.
Mm-hmm.
He was good at letting his staff have time for us.
Mm-hmm.
And he was fun to have at committee meetings in the early days. And he used to do this thing when we had a bit of money to give the gardens, he would prepare a wish list.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it would just be a list of things and the committee could choose the things that mm-hmm. they wanted to support. And sometimes they'd choose nearly the whole lot. So mm-hmm. it was a good way of doing it.
Mm. So the relationship between you and... Because he was director by then? Or no, he was still assistant?
He would have still been assistant.
Right, okay.
Probably. I think he would have handed over when he became director. I can't actually remember the timing of
that's
that.
That's okay.
But he handed over to Ed McAllister, mm-hmm. actually.
Mm-hmm.
And Ed was a good committee member too.
Yeah, definitely, yes, for sure.
Nice fellow mm. and entertaining.
Yeah.
So I always felt pretty sorry for them having to come back to our committee meetings, which were sometimes rather torturous, mm-hmm. but they were always very generous.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And can you you know, sort of like paint me a picture of what generous and fun means? What?
Ah, well, Brian was a very intellectual fellow
mm-hmm.
and a very good sense of humour and... yes, he was a happy man when mm-hmm. he was assistant director. Wore mm-hmm. off a bit after a while as director.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was hard for him because he was we mentioned before the change from the director of the Botanic Gardens as being seen as rather godlike in society, mm-hmm. and the department never interfered, as far as I know. But then as time went on, and in the time of Brian, the department was applying heavier controls and a lot of things changed. And the director was in a difficult position, really, because he had to report to the minister. He had to be a good public servant. But he was also seen by some people to be this very special person, and he wasn't really given the freedom to be so. Mm-hmm. And I think people's expectations weren't met.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you have a performance agreement, which you have to sign, and your job's on the line, well, you've got to be a very fearless person like Noel Lothian to prevail.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And in the end, I think Brian just wore out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Very hard for him.
Mm-hmm.
And then, Ed McAllister's just a nice, entertaining person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Lots of friends, gregarious, mm-hmm. you know, turned up at meetings.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Very kindly.
Yes, so it seems that Noel Lothian in the first instance and then Brian in the second instance when they were directors were obviously supportive of their assistant coming to the committee meetings and supported the assistant in their decision-making around the friends.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, there was a happy relationship.
Yes, it's very good. So can, you know, why did you decide to take up the position of guide leader then? Tell me about that.
Ah, well, the idea of it interested me. I liked the idea of passing on what I had learned
mm-hmm.
to other people.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been the main thing, mm-hmm. and also the chance to learn more about the gardens.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And how many guides were there in the first instance?
There were 20.
20.
Mm.
And did you how did you get that 20? Tell me about that process.
Colin put a bit in the Gazette
mm-hmm.
asking for people to ring, and he unfortunately put my telephone number, and I'd forgotten to tell them that we were going to be away when the Gazette came out. So they ended up ringing him. Mm-hmm. That wasn't very good, actually. Mm-hmm. Not sure that I ever apologised. But anyway, the first 20 were accepted and mm-hmm. Off we went.
Yes, wonderful. Mm.
It was.
Yes. And so Colin had devised the program that you would...
I think probably in conjunction with Brian Morgan.
Okay.
I would think that.
And how long did that take you? Like,
I think it was 8 lectures for mm-hmm. 8 weeks.
Okay.
And
then at the
I
end
think,
of... Sorry.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm a bit hazy on when we started. I think we just went round the gardens to learn them on our own. I don't remember that we had any help with that.
Goodness.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But I'm actually a bit hazy on that.
That's okay. And so then you just developed your walk, learning it as you went.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And after 8 weeks, did you start giving... guided walks at the end of the 8 weeks, or did you have to put out any sort of promotional material to promote them at all?
Yes, we did.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I can remember some very amateurish posters that my children produced, actually. And I can remember I got the guides to colour in the illustrations and then distribute them.
Right.
In likely places. Actually, we used to do quite a lot of promotion,
mm-hmm.
You know, getting people to take bundles of leaflets and okay. go around to libraries and, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. awful lot of stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we must have started off with regular weekly walks,
mm-hmm.
I think, and then we would have advertised that we were ready to take groups.
Mm-hmm.
And the first group I ever taught was absolutely terrifying. And it was in the Australian Garden History Society conference, the first one they held in Adelaide. And we were on, and I can still remember some of the people who were in my walk. And they knew a lot more than I did about quite a lot of things. Mm. But I had at that stage learnt that if they know more than you do, you ask them to tell people what they know. Mm-hmm. So, it's an interesting experience.
Excellent. So how long were you in the position as guide leader?
Oh, I think we had a rule that the guide leader was guide leader for 3 years, mm-hmm. and the secretary and booking officer did two. Mm-hmm. And my maths was such that I thought that would mean they'd never all go off at the same time, but of course that doesn't work. And I'm ashamed that I hadn't seen that. But anyway, that was the reason for doing it, so I would have done it for 3 years. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then I think I handed over to Audrey Abbey,
okay.
I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah. So tell me what it was like being a guide leader, that first guide leader.
I used to get a bit bothered about our standards, I would have to say. Mm-hmm. That was a difficulty. Mm-hmm. And I thought of various things to do, which are probably still in the archive somewhere. Mm-hmm. Or like, people were doing, different guys were doing a lot of research into various trees. And so I suggested that we each do a detailed study of a tree. Or I think I actually said a permanent, semi-permanent fixture in the garden, so that if someone wanted to do, some architecture or something, they could do that. But it was so that we could build up a backbone, mm-hmm. That would be always there. Mm. You know, these are the things that you could always count on. Mm. And some of the work done in that was really excellent. Mm. And it should be around somewhere. In fact, I know I've still got some of it. Mm-hmm. But Vern Whittenbury on the River Red Gum was outstanding. Mm-hmm. And Marion Wells on Adelaide Gold. You know, that material is all there somewhere. Mm. And it's still as relevant today as it was then.
I'm sure.
Mm. That was quite a good thing to do. Mm. And there was something. They got a bit grumpy at one meeting. It was a February meeting, first meeting for the year, and I landed that on them as well as something else that they had to do. I can't remember what it was now. They were all a bit taken aback. I think they thought they were not going to be brought up to scratch in the way that they were having to be. Mm-hmm. But anyway, they calmed down after a while. Yes.
Mm, well, that's good. So what did you most enjoy about that position?
Learning, passing on what I'd learnt, mm-hmm. and being a member of a very close group. Lots of good people.
Yeah, that's lovely.
And I don't believe in the sentimental nonsense that people who like plants are nice people, because I know there are plenty of people who like plants because they don't like people. So I don't hold with that. Mm-hmm. But it's the shared interests, mm-hmm. isn't it? Having common interests.
Yes, indeed. So you mentioned one of the challenges for you was that you used to worry about that you weren't up to scratch. Were there any other challenges that you had to face as guide leader?
Oh, seeing guides who were plainly inadequate, mm-hmm. was very difficult, mm-hmm. and a very difficult thing to handle. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure I did very well at that. Mm-hmm. And I booted out one of the trainees in one of the courses. And I think a friend of hers died without my being forgiven. I think that wasn't very good. We unfortunately never had a mechanism for getting rid of somebody, mm-hmm. not an overt one, not a stated one. Mm-hmm. So that was a challenge. Mm-hmm. It wasn't good, that. Mm-hmm. What I should have said somewhere along the line was, I always found the Botanic Gardens fascinating, not just because they're a place where there are plants, mm-hmm. but it was Brian Morley always saying that a botanic garden is where science meets art. And I think that is absolutely true, and I think it explains the fascination of botanic gardens. Mm-hmm. You've got, apart from architecture, statuary, sculpture, etc., you've got landscaping, mm-hmm. and landscape architecture is very fascinating. Mm-hmm. One of the three-dimensional arts, which is, like sculpture. Mm-hmm. I always find both of those very interesting.
Absolutely.
Not having a three-dimensional imagination myself, I admire it in others.
Yes, definitely, definitely. It's a wonderful vision, isn't it, of a botanic garden?
Well, Brian was very good on things like that. Very strong aesthetic sense. Yes, not that it, I mean, you might not like everything he did, but he always did it with aesthetics in mind.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So while you were leader, guide leader, did you stay on the committee as well?
Yes, I was on the committee for 20 years.
Oh, okay.
And I was there also as, I'd been secretary at one stage, and then I was the Gazette representative because I edited the Gazette for 10 years with Eric Sims.
Yes, I'd actually, I'd like to talk about that, if you wouldn't mind. Yes, because Meg and I have spoken to Eric. And
have you?
Yes.
Yes.
And he was, as you would imagine, incredibly generous. But
He would have loved it. Yes. He loves visitors, intelligent visitors.
Yes, that's terrific. So can you tell me a little bit about, so you were joint editor with Eric for 10 years, that's correct, yeah.
Colin did it for 10 years and then Eric and I did it for 10 years.
Okay.
And he would have gone on, but I said, no, we would stop.
So can you tell me what that role involved?
It was quite a lot, really. Eric had a good eye for the botany, and you can, if you read his articles, you'll see there's some pretty special knowledge there. He used to go out on expeditions with Professor Cleland, and after Professor Cleland went, his great expert on mushrooms, fungi, and after he went blind, Eric would take him out on these weekly excursions, and Professor Cleland could identify fungi by their smell. Amazing. So Eric had a lot of knowledge about plants. But I was the one who did the liaising with the garden and reported on what was going on. And I always thought that was very important, that you should actually know what changes were going on in the gardens, because it was nobody's role to tell you. I mean, as a guide, that was something that was a bit lacking. You could turn up and find it, you know, a tree that you particularly loved was lying in a heap of firewood on the ground. Not good. It was the Chinese elm that was very bad for me. But there would be quite big changes that would be, they'd start to implement them, and they had not thought to tell the guides that that was going on.
Right.
So I made it my business to find out that kind of thing.
So you made it your business as guide leader to do that, or in your role, in your job role?
I really felt that the friends should know.
Okay, so this was, you would report this in the Gazette?
Yes. Very nice.
That's excellent. And it seems to me that that you, well, just by the smile on your face when we mentioned Eric, that there was a nice working relationship between the two of you.
Yes, it was. We managed pretty well, mostly.
Yeah. And what did that relationship look like? Can you tell me about that?
Oh well, he had excellent memory. He still has. He would remember things better than I did. And still does. But I learnt a lot from him, and I still visit him.
Oh, that's good.
He's a very interesting man.
Yes, he certainly is. And he was incredibly generous to Meg and I.
He would have loved it.
Yes, I think it was an enjoyable experience, I hope so. So what did you most enjoy about that role?
Well, I quite like writing.
Okay.
I used to write the odd thing for the Gazette. I also used to write some verse. Anything anonymous will be me.
Okay.
I actually drove the director mad on one occasion. He didn't know it was me. And it was actually when I was on the board, and I wrote something which he took great exception to. He was furious, and he went to the minister with a copy of this, saying, "Look at what I have to put up with." The minister, again, two straws. Ministers don't like that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. They don't want negative problems mm-hmm. brought to them. But yes. But I liked the idea that people were being educated mm-hmm. about the gardens, mm-hmm. and the guides were good. They used to write things. Mm-hmm. I think that's it.
Excellent. So, and for, while you and Eric were co-editors, it continued to be produced bi-monthly. Is that correct?
Well, it was more complicated.
Oh, okay.
It was a fortnight before each meeting, except for the AGM. Yes. So it was five times a year.
Five times a year. Mm. Okay. All right. Mm. All right.
Yes, and Brian Morley was generous with staff time for that. Mm-hmm. We were able to get Gilbert Dasshorst to do some of the mm-hmm. covers. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, that was lovely. Mm. Lovely. We liked the look of it. Mm. I know it didn't have photographs in it, mm-hmm. but it was also on recycled paper, mm-hmm. which I've abandoned. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was very important that the Gazette should not look professional mm-hmm. because we weren't professional, mm-hmm. we were amateurs. Mm-hmm. And we liked the style of our Gazette. In fact, mm-hmm. Eric and I are still disgustingly self-congratulatory when we get together. So, tut-tut, it's not what it used to be, Eric. Dreadful, really awful.
No, that's good. So did you have a bit of a... How did you edit... did you have more contributions than you could use, or was it mainly you and Eric that wrote for the Gazette? Or
No, we had some very good contributors mm-hmm. who would pop up. There was a very nice man at Taparoo who took a fancy to something Eric wrote, and he wrote a lovely thing about growing cotton in his own garden. Mm-hmm. And he gave... Eric and he used to talk on the phone, and he gave Eric permission to alter his pieces. And Eric had retired not all that long before, and he got his secretary to type up what he wrote in longhand. And David Searle, the man was, and he just disappeared. We think he must have died. Mm-hmm. But he was quite old mm-hmm. when he started doing this. But, you know, there were really interesting people that you'd never met, you'd never mm. heard of, but mm-hmm. these contributions popped up.
Yes.
It was very nice.
Yes, indeed. It's a lovely example, isn't it, of how people, you know, friends, the friends can contribute in all sorts of different ways according to their ability and time and circumstance, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, yeah. And I think the development of the friends into the growing group and to the botanical art group, mm-hmm. I think that's... They've been wonderful developments. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think the loss, as I said before, the loss of Yarrabee and the loss of North Lodge mm-hmm. were really pretty devastating for the Friends. Mm. But one day, who knows, they might get the shop back. Mm. Can't believe it's making money.
Mm. Mm. The commercial. Yeah. Mm. Who knows? Who knows what the future will bring, I guess.
Indeed. Yes. But I think the loss of a place for exhibitions, mm-hmm. Which the loss of Yarrabee represented, it was a very great shame.
Because am I correct in my recollection that Yarrabee was lost during the Wine Centre debate, or, you know, the Wine Centre debate? Yes. Yeah.
Well put.
Yes. Yeah. Mm. And it was a great loss, but I guess that was well beyond the hands of the Friends, wasn't it?
Oh, yes, it was beyond the hands of the board too.
Yes, yes.
There was a public announcement at something that I was present at, mm-hmm. at the Gardens, that the Wine Centre was going to be built there and that people would be moved out of a purpose-built building, mm-hmm. which the Herbarium was, mm-hmm. they were going to be moved out into this building, which is not appropriate. Mm. Mm.
Oh, incredible. It's such a feeling of powerlessness when that sort of decree happens, isn't it? Mm. Yeah. So I know about, Meg and I have heard about the public outcry and particularly the Friends were very vocal in some of that. So how did the Friends as a group, in from your perspective, how did they try and get on with that, you know, like move on from it? I mean, if the decision was made, you know, the public debate was lost, if you like, and it was all going to happen. How did the Friends move on from that time?
Oh, well, I guess there was no choice.
Mm-hmm.
I think the loss of Yarrabee, they probably haven't moved on mm-hmm. from that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our Friends still mm-hmm. deplore the loss of it.
Mm.
Yes, I don't think I could really add to that.
That's okay. Yeah. Mm. So Yarrabee was not just, it became this wonderful exhibition place, and I know before I became a Friend, I went to some of those exhibitions and they were wonderful. Mm. And it was also the home for the craft, became a home for the craft group, didn't it?
Yes.
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 Yeah. Yeah. So were you involved in either of those activities or just in a general sense?
I didn't have so much to do with exhibitions.
Mm-hmm.
I had been a member of the craft group mm-hmm. when it met in our houses,
mm-hmm.
mostly Shirley Simpson's mm-hmm. because she had a pool room out in the garden, and it was very messy dealing mm-hmm. with all the stuff from Wetumpka.
Mm-hmm.
It was really dirty
mm-hmm.
and it made a mess, so that mm-hmm. was a very good place to go.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually had to call the fire brigade after one of our meetings there because we were cleaning up afterwards and it was a hot day and a strong north wind was blowing. And Shirley had dumped all the leftover stuff, which is absolutely tinder dry, mm-hmm. in her incinerator, and she'd lit it, and then we'd not looked after it.
Mm.
And the fire got away, and there was this frantic call to the fire brigade, who came,
mm.
and unfortunately Shirley's neighbour had been a refugee from those dreadful fires in the southeast.
Oh,
his house had been burnt out down there, so Shirley didn't think it was going to be a good move if she burned out his tool shed. very mm. alarming, actually.
Mm, absolutely. Mm. Mm.
Not one of our finer moments.
Oh dear. So you mentioned that that you then became a member of the board. When did you become a member of the board?
Oh, I should have looked that up because mm-hmm. I simply don't remember. It was probably something like 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I was on it for 16 years.
Okay.
And I was on in my own right, not mm-hmm. as a Friend,
mm-hmm.
but it was the knowledge that I had gained from being a Friend was very helpful,
mm-hmm.
sometimes not helpful when mm-hmm. you heard things being said that you knew didn't bear any relationship to actual fact.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to tread carefully sometimes.
Mm. Mm. So when you say you were on in your own right, you were the sort of the public member on the board?
Well, they didn't really have one.
Okay.
There were just eight people.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And in those days, they liked to get people who had some feeling for the gardens, mm-hmm. which I think while I was on the board that changed, and there was much more of an effort to get people from what they used to refer to as the high end of town.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a bit noticeable sometimes that a board member might have absolutely no understanding of how the gardens work
mm-hmm.
or what they were about.
Mm-hmm.
No idea at all. Mm-hmm. Mm. Which I thought was a bit of a mistake.
Mm. Mm. So you were on the board while Brian was director, is that right?
Yes.
Yes.
Mm. Yes.
So I was really interested, you mentioned earlier on about how important you believe the liaison was between the Friends and the Botanic Gardens of Adelaide administration, for want of a better word,
mm.
and that you had developed a very good relationship with the administration. Can you tell me a little bit more about that? I mean, why why you think that that's a very important thing to do, and why you saw that as part of your role, that sort of thing?
I think just dissemination of information.
Right.
Really. Mm-hmm. The board would make decisions that would affect parts of the government, mm-hmm. like decisions about the herbarium. Mm-hmm. And some board members had not the faintest idea what was going on there. Mm-hmm. So, it was very important for people to understand how this institution worked. Mm. It's not as complex now because, as I understand it, the Plant Biodiversity Centre is hived off, really, and a different administration. Mm-hmm. But it was all under the one director to start with. In fact, when I first got on the board, Noel was the director at the time. Mm-hmm. And he was very much boss of the herbarium as well as the gardens. Mm-hmm. And it made the institution extremely complex one because the herbarium was strictly scientific and the botanic gardens was a mixture. Mm. And in those days, I don't know if it still happens, but there was great emphasis on getting wild collected seed. And the Index Seminum was sent out, all around the world. It was a worldwide body. All the botanic gardens sharing seed for nothing. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that still happens. No. I rather suspect not.
No, I don't think.
And there was very great emphasis on having seed collected in the wild for everything grown in any of the botanic gardens. Mm. There was no wish to plant cultivars at all, and that was maintained under Brian Morley. In fact, probably strengthened under Brian, I think, because Noel was primarily a horticulturist.
Yeah, I've heard that before, that he was a great plantsman, and
was. So was Brian, actually.
Yes.
They both were.
Yes, it's a wonderful asset in a director, isn't it?
Yes.
To have that hands-on, practical knowledge.
Yes.
Mm.
Mm.
Yeah, that's excellent, thank you. So, if I could just return briefly to Colin Robjohns, because I think out of the people that we have spoken to date, you were the one that actually had a very strong working relationship with him, and so have some insider knowledge.
So I think Marjorie Andrew would have too, and probably Shirley Simpson.
Yes, Marjorie has been very kind. We haven't been able to interview Shirley as yet because she's in Victoria, as you know. So we'll have to see how that one works. Mm. Yeah, but can you just tell me a little bit about him? I mean, you've said that he was a very intelligent and very capable man, and that he was quite, adamant about wanting things his way. Mm. Yeah,
He thought things out very carefully, and he started a terrific number of things. Mm-hmm. Not exhibitions, not the growing group, and not the art group, but he started everything else, I think, and he sort it all out from the ground up, what the basis of the activity would be, and so on. And he had a lot of friends that he could call on. He himself was a plantsman. Mm-hmm. He had a singularly beautiful garden on the creek up at Marriottville, beautiful garden, which he would open for us. And he was a fantastic photographer. Mm-hmm. He was not a thrilling speaker, but his slides were thrilling. Mm-hmm. Very good photographer. Mm-hmm. Yes, he was an interesting man. Mm-hmm. He wrote his autobiography.
Yes, I have read that, My Several Lives. Yes.
It's not a... the writing is not terrific, but it was an interesting life.
Mm, my word, my word.
And we actually went on the trip. We'd never... my husband and I had never been on a guided tour before, but we went on the Friends Tour to China, and that was led by Colin, and it was fantastic. He'd thought that out. He knew where he wanted us to go. It was an emphasis on plants, landscapes and gardens. Mm-hmm. and he had set his heart on taking us to Suzhou. And he just pestered and pestered until they agreed that we could go there for a day. That was a great experience.
Mm. Mm. My word.
Mm. Noah Lothian was actually on that tour. Mm-hmm. And there was another chap, John Womersley, who was who'd been a director of Lay Botanic Garden. Mm. So we had botanists around us to help.
Mm. They sound like very heady days.
Yes, yes. They were.
Yes. So just as we're sort of winding up a little bit, so how did your role in the Friends change over time?
Oh, I had to be pretty careful when I was on the board.
Mm-hmm.
I had to keep things separate,
mm-hmm.
which wasn't always easy.
Mm-hmm.
But on the whole, people were pretty good at not trying to get information out of me,
mm-hmm.
which was nice of them.
Mm.
That'd be the biggest change, I think. Mm-hmm. But I was still a guide while I was on the board.
Okay.
I just spent a terrible lot of my life here for a long time. But I always felt my husband worked very hard, mm-hmm. and I knew that if I got a job, he wouldn't be able to do anything more things at home.
Mm-hmm.
He just didn't have the time.
Mm-hmm.
So coming to the Botanic Gardens filled a real need.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry about that.
Mm-hmm.
So, thanks. Thanks very much.
Yes, I think that seems to be quite a common thing that we hear, that the gardens did fill a need, and particularly perhaps for more women than men, maybe.
I've been thrilled, really, to see some people. One woman was actually told by her doctor to go and join the Friends of the Botanic Gardens. I think she'd just been widowed, and, you know, he could see that she needed something in her life. Mm-hmm. There she was, turned up because the doctor told her. But also, I've seen some people really gain in confidence, I think. They've found a body of people with whom they had a lot in common,
mm-hmm.
and they've taken on roles that they have not realised that they could do,
mm-hmm.
and it's been a really lovely thing to watch.
My word.
Mm. Mm.
So what do you most appreciate about the Adelaide Botanic Gardens?
All of them, Oh, the trees.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're very special places, aren't they? They're there not just for beauty, but for instruction.
Yeah.
I love the mix. I think Brian Morley was absolutely right,
mm-hmm.
where science meets art.
Yes, it's a wonderful definition.
Yes. He trotted it out quite often, but rightly so.
Mm. Mm. We're just about coming to the end of the tape. Is there anything that you would like to add, Anna, that you would particularly like to have on tape?
No, I can't think of anything offhand, but I probably will as soon as I go home.
It's off in the way.
Yes. Mm.
Well, look, I just, if you're happy, I'd like to finish it here with very grateful thanks.
It's been a pleasure.
Yes, it's been a wonderful interview, and certainly in all of these interviews, Meg and I learn so much, and this has not been an exception. So thank you.